Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Gauzy Geekdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Crystal Williams. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm joined again with my good friend, Anthony Grimaglia. Hi.
How's it going? You might as well just make me a host at this point.
I think at this point you are a honorary host. You're an honorary gal.
I appreciate that. Now, when you say host, though, do you mean like host, like a host club host? Because I mean, I haven't seen Aura on Host Club in a while, but I feel like it's one of those things that will either be really funny or really awful on revisiting, personally. But
I mean, with the dub, isn't there a certain somebody?
Yeah, well, I you know what? That's like the Mel Gibson effect in most things. You have this really great movie, and then you have that guy in it. Whoever that guy
is. Oh, even like Chicken Run, right?
Exactly. Great movie, Chicken Run. And then you have Mel Gibson in it, and you're like, you just kind of are enjoying it despite the fact Mel Gibson's there.
Lethal Weapon is fun.
Oh, I love Lethal. I love those Lethal Weapon movies. And Mad Max.
And
but
Mad
Mel
Max.
Gibson's there. You just have to kind of like just grit your teeth and go, okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like the new show, The Continental, which I actually rather enjoyed as a like continuation with the John Wick franchise and like a prequel, but like.
And then just have Mel Gibson there. Like, why even cast him? Like, at that point. Like, there's some actors with so much baggage, you just...
I'm not trying to have, like, a nuance on this because he shouldn't even be in it.
Yeah, there's no nuance.
It sucks that he has talent. It sucks that he has talent.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He works fairly well as a really despicable villain in it, partially because he is in real life a villain.
Yeah, it's not really acting then, is it? It's filming him.
No, but he is... his performance in the show is good, it's just he's a terrible man.
Yeah, I mean, but there's other actors, too, in the world who are just awful people who we just kind of, like, tolerate in film because they're good at acting.
You know, James Woods?
James Woods is a great example of that. I think...
I love Videodrome.
I knew you were going to say that, Crystal. Videodrome is such a good movie. And he's
great in it.
Honestly, that's not the case of an actor who's playing a really sleazy character and you kind of, like... Yeah, I can see that.
It tracks.
Much of a stretch. Same with Hercules. I'm like, he plays Hades like a used car salesman. And I'm like, you know what, though? He would, though.
It sucks when talented people are assholes.
Yeah, because you kind of like, especially if they're talented at playing awful people.
Right.
Like James Woods.
See, I want people who are like the, I keep forgetting his name, but he's the actor who played Jason in the reboot film.
Friday the 13th?
The Friday the 13th remake one. I keep forgetting his name, but like every story about him who plays Jason, he's like one of the sweetest guys.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing also with, like, horror movie villains. Like, consistently, those guys tend to be pretty cool-sounding. Or, like, I was reading...
Was it Ted White? Is that one of the actors who played Jason?
I think he passed away recently, right, Ted White?
He passed away. I remember hearing his... Yeah, he did. I remember hearing the story about how he... I think it was for 4. How they were making the actress in that freezing water for like hours and she was shivering. And he got so fucking mad at the director that he threatened to like walk off if they don't like pull her out of the water. And I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, genuinely. And I've heard nothing but good things about Matthew Lillard recently. Like, I'm only saying it because like Five Nights at Freddy's just came out and again, Matthew Lillard proves he's the best part of any horror movie he's in.
Sure.
I've heard nothing but good things about him also. So it's like, some actors seem pretty cool, and others are, like, complete jerks and get, like, tons and tons of roles. So, like, I'm going to tell you there.
That is very true.
I don't know if any of this has to do with The Exorcist at the beginning, but, like, it's very interesting.
It doesn't. Some of this is honestly more interesting than Exorcist at the beginning.
Yeah, Exorcist at the beginning is one of those movies that I'm like... The moment
we are continuing our mini series, which you probably saw the title of our view of the Exorcist films, and we are looking over the 4th film in the franchise, The Beginning, which is a prequel.
Yeah, this is the one I didn't want to talk about when I started this thing. Like, I can talk about Exodus 2. There's a lot to talk about there. Exodus 3, masterpiece. Dominion, interesting, flawed, confused film. But the beginning is like the Michael Bay of, it's like the Die Hard 2 of Exodus films, in part because Die Hard 2 director Rennie Harlan made this film.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So Rennie Harlan, you've seen some of his films, I guarantee it. But you've
seen Die Hard 2.
You've seen Die Hard 2? Have you seen A Nightmare on Elm Street 4?
You're going to be surprised by this, but one of the reasons why I wanted to do a watch through of the Nightmare on Elm Street films is because I've only ever seen like three of them.
Get Lizzie's butt over here.
I know, that's our plan. When Lizzie gets back, we're going to go through that. Yes, I need to see them.
Please ask me to those. I love Nightmare on Elm Street. I love that series. So Rennie Harlan did four. He did the movie Cliffhanger with Sylvester Stallone.
Okay.
And the movie he did right before, I think like his last film he did before the beginning. Okay, it's not the last film, but in 1999, he produced the classic film Blast from the Past with Brendan Fraser while directing Deep Blue Sea.
Oh.
Then he did Driven and Mindhunters. And then he did Exorcist the Beginning, which was quickly followed by a film I'm embarrassed to say I loved as a teenager, The Coven.
Coven.
Crystal, have you seen The Coven?
I don't believe I have.
All right, so imagine The Craft.
Oh, yeah.
But with guys. And Sebastian Stan as, like, a villain, kind of.
Oh.
It is one of the gayest straight films I've ever seen. And it is horrible if you're watching it sober. You need either, like, copious amounts of alcohol or a bong to get through this film. Because it is just that bad. But in, like, the best possible way.
Rennie Harlan is directing the upcoming Strangers movies. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, he has a trilogy of the Strangers coming out, which, again, I think he's better suited for than, say, Exorcist the Beginning. But, again, like, all these movies – oh, and he did Cutthroat Island, one of the biggest flops of all time. I forgot about that one. Okay, so – but, again, like, all these films, they have a couple things in common. Right? They're all bombastic, they're all over the top, and they're all fun, but, like, not necessarily super meaningful. Like, I love Deep Blue Sea. It's not a deep film.
I love Die Hard 2. It's just a copy of the first film.
I don't like Die Hard 2, if I'm being honest with you. At least...
Oh, you don't? Okay.
I don't love it. I like it, but I don't love it. Like, I think Die Hard 1 is a masterpiece. I think Die Hard 3, Die Hard with a Vengeance. I think that's a lot of fun. I honestly like 4 more than 2. It's something about 2
that's the same.
It's something about 2 that makes you feel like it's the same movie, but, like, less interesting. It's the only one until, like, Live Free and Die Hard, which is by far the worst one, that I feel is, like, the same
as Die Hard, the fourth one, though, isn't it?
Wait, Live Free or Die Hard.
Live Free or Die Hard's the fourth one. The fifth one is Die Hard 5, right?
What's Die Hard? No, I thought Die Hard. Wait, which one's Die Hard 5? Now I'm doubting myself.
A Good Day to Die Hard.
A Good Day to Die Hard. So for me, my ranking is 1, 3, 4, 2, and then a mile later is 5. That's my unambiguous ranking.
No. I'm 100% in agreement with that.
Like 2, I don't love, but I'm like, if it's on, I'm gonna watch it. 5, if it's on, I'm changing the channel.
Yeah, I saw it, and it was just bad.
It's bad.
It's weirdly bad. Yeah.
Anything to not talk about Exorcist the Believer, the beginning, I'm sorry.
By the way, that Good Day to Die Hard has a whopping 15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's too high. It's too high. So, yeah.
But this one was rated R,
That's clearly a mark of quality. So, Renny Harlin, he does Exodus: The Beginning, because the previous, so the thing with the prequels to The Exodus is that they filmed an entire movie, and the production company did not like it. So they hired Renny Harlin to essentially remake the movie they just filmed. They put it in theaters, it flopped, and they eventually just released the version they first filmed, and it also flopped. So you have two Exorcist prequels, both telling very similar stories and very different patterns, and Exorcist: The Beginning is the film they made to appeal to a broader audience, and it shows. You can tell this was made to appeal to everyone.
I thought it was a completely mediocre film.
Yeah.
What you would call like a C minus, maybe a D plus.
It's probably a D plus, actually. The only thing that's remarkable about it is that they try to show some really disturbing visuals, but because you just don't care, you just watch it and go, oh, okay. It doesn't have any impact on you.
Like, I like some of the gore, but...
No, the gore, I think, is not compelling. It's not disturbing. Like, none of it is... Like the original Exorcist...
What I mean is that I like that it... That it, I don't know. I like a little bit of gore in films.
Oh, so same.
Like, oh, well, this is something different.
No,
like,
same.
That's all
like,
my mind was going, but, like, I didn't say I, like... It made it a good movie. You know what I mean?
No, same. It's fun. It's like flash in the pan, but it's nothing of substance. And
right, exactly.
What's funny is there are films that are extremely bloody and gory that I think are really entertaining for being bloody and gory. A good example was Friday the 13th, or what do you call it?
Videodrome.
What?
Videodrome?
Yeah, what's when you said I talked over you.
I said Dead Alive.
Yeah, great example. But, like, with those, they set the violence up in a way where it's meaningful, right? Like, maybe
either meaningful or it's comedic.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. They do something with it. I feel like with this film, they just show you violent stuff, and they just move on before you can even absorb what you're looking at.
So they want you to be horrified.
Yeah, but there's, like, a horrifying visual, but I felt nothing looking at it. The one scene where the one mother gives birth to, like, a maggoty stillborn baby.
Oh, yeah.
And that should be one of the most horrifying things you've ever seen. And you just feel nothing.
Like, because you don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, it's stunning how lifeless this film is, despite all the attempts at, like, catching your eye.
That's kind of how I feel about the first Terrifier.
Yeah,
I feel like it's just that film is just a series of like attempts at making practical effects. Some of it's neat, but the story is nothing.
Yeah, like I mean, the only thing I remember from Terrifier 1 is the handsaw scene where they saw the one girl down. Yeah, because it's horrible. But like it's deeply disturbing. But I don't particularly feel upset watching it.
It's honestly not even the most disturbing thing that series has done, so.
Yeah, honestly, I think All Hallows Eve, the first film in that series, is more disturbing than Terrifier.
Like, I've not more, seen that one, so.
I think it's the first. I think it's called All Hallows Eve.
It
is, okay. I always, for some reason, there's so many Halloween anthology films, I feel like I mix the names up. But, like, that... There's a scene in that where a woman is, like, being, like, mutilated that I feel is such a cruelty to it that, like, it really stands out to me. But
kind of like anyway. Terrifier 2.
Yeah, Terrifier 2 has some... But that's funny, though. Like, it's a lot of funny bits in Terrifier 2.
I think Terrifier 2 is a lot of fun. I think that movie's way better than the first one.
Yeah, the first one feels like a makeup effects feel. Terrifier 2...
The second one feels like a movie.
It just needs to be... 40 minutes shorter. There's like
I actually didn't mind it being long, but I know what you're saying.
Like, the finale goes on for too long. I feel like you could have cut out a few of those scenes and it would have been like, a few of those sequences, and that conclusion would have shaved off 40 minutes of the film, I feel like.
Like, well, we're getting it back in theaters pretty soon. Did you see that?
I did see that. And I hear that Terrifier 3 is going to be a Christmas movie.
That's fun.
Yeah, so we get holiday cheer with Art the Clown.
Who's a great villain, and I think the actor who plays him is phenomenal.
Oh, I love Art the Clown as a character. I think he's a great antagonist. Like, he just has such contempt for life. Like, you can, everything he does, you feel is motivated by a deep hatred towards humanity. And I feel like that shines through despite his, like, pantomime clown appearance. Like, you can see, like, there's such a deep hatred towards existence. And I think
it wouldn't
really
work
compelling.
Without such a good actor playing him.
Oh,
you know?
You need a good, it's like a Freddy Krueger type of character. If you didn't have the right actor there, and again, All Hallows Eve, you can see this too, like, without him as Art, it doesn't sell as well.
Absolutely.
By the way, none of this has to do with Exorcist the Beginning.
I think this is actually a phenomenal sign, just how boring the beginning is.
And again, there's so much on paper that sounds compelling. Like, Crystal, if I told you, we're going to see Father Marin's past as he's dealing with the Nazis forcing him to choose who they kill. If I told you they're going to Africa to uncover the place where Satan fell from heaven, that sounds like intense. Like, there's a lot of weight behind those words.
A lot of great concepts wasted in a bad execution.
How did they find a way to make all of it seem so boring?
Now, I actually don't mind Stellan Skarsgård in the role, even though I do think he's a little flat.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see him again in Dominion. I'm telling you that right now. So,
yeah,
you got that going for you. Like, Stellan Skarsgård was cast for a reason. I think the rest of the film goes. He's a great actor. He's fantastic. He's great in what was it? I honestly, I know everyone thinks of Thor. Everyone thinks of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but Andor also. But like, I always think of Good Will Hunting when I think of Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah,
like, it's a minor character he plays, but like, everything he says, you feel this sense of like. Like, you get, like, the type of snobbiness of the character, but also the sense of earnestness. Like, there's a lot of contradictory elements to that character that I feel like people sleep on in favor of, obviously, Robin Williams and Matt Damon, who are incredible in that film also. Actually, Good Will Hunting is just a great movie. Like, there's just nothing bad about that film. It's like a, everything is, I don't know. But,
Are you talking to me? The more I talk to people, the more I realize how many films I just haven't seen yet. I haven't seen Good
Will
Hunting.
You've never seen Good Will Hunting?
No. Crystal.
I've seen
Dead Poets Society.
I'm going to fucking fly to the West Coast. I'm going to strap your butt down and make you watch Good Will Hunting and the Nightmare on Elm Street films, if that's what it takes.
We're going to go through all the movies that I've missed. Jacob's Ladder, like...
Oh, God damn it. You're probably lucky I don't live nearby you, because otherwise I'm going to, like, tell you, Crystal, come over here. We're watching Jacob's Ladder.
If you live, I got a newer TV recently, and I have a surround sound system. It's pretty nice. You could come over and hang out with me.
Crystal, don't offer that, because you know I'll do it. It's you're on dangerous territory, and trust me, no one wants me hanging out with them talking during a movie like that.
I have a great movie setup. And it's a 75-inch television. You should come over at some point. We'll watch movies together.
Crystal, you are inviting danger by that, because I will take you up on that, and I will annoy you so much with movies. You won't even be able to deal with it. I tell you now.
There's a movie I want to talk about.
What?
There's a movie I want to talk about, but after Exorcist. So let's get through this one quickly.
Yeah, so...
There's a movie I just watched that I know you just watched too, so.
Oh my goodness. Is it Five Nights at Freddy's?
No, which we could talk about. It's,
Hell House LLC?
Hell House LLC. I watched it last night.
God, that was so good, right?
It was so good. Let's get to Exorcist and then we'll talk about that.
Yeah, so, What's the scariest scene in this movie?
In Exorcist?
In Exorcist, the beginning. Is there one? Because I can't think of it. How are Nazis not frightening in this film?
That's probably the scariest scene.
Yeah, because like that visual of the Nazis like telling Marin, choose who we shoot, it's so horrifying on paper. But they just kind of throw it in there. And like, they never really linger on the trauma. They never linger on like that sense of horror. Like they tell you like he stopped being a priest after that. But like,
I don't give you enough time with Marin to make you feel the emotions that he's feeling outside of just him, Stellan doing his best to show it in his facial, like his facial expression. He's doing his best.
I would say all the actors are doing a lot of acting that's not on the page.
Yeah.
Like every scene.
It sounds like they're all trying to give more than what's there.
Oh, yeah. Every scene in this script is horrifying thing happens, but we don't have time to unpack that. Let's get to the next scene quickly. Like, every time something awful happens, they just go to the next scene. In fact, there's one point in the movie where, like, so, like, the idea of the movie is, I guess we can sum up the plot, because Marin goes to Africa to investigate a church that should not have been built in the time it was built in. And in doing so, invokes rivalries between the colonialists and the people of not Nairobi. Where is this? It's Kenya. It's in Kenya. And it culminates in like a genuinely horrifying concept of like the colonists just massacring the native Kenyans, and the native Kenyans fighting for their lives against... That's another thing, too, that's weird. Like, they imply that the devil is needed to make colonists act awful. Like, what's that implying about society, you know? Like, the colonists are just colonists. They're all terrible because they're colonizing a country other than their own. So we're not going to like them. But they try to both sides it a little bit, where it's
they do, and I'm like,
like it's like the devil has, like I'm saying the devil because like I know it's Pazuzu, but they imply this is the location where Satan fell, so Satan has a hand in this too, alongside Pazuzu. Like he ruins the Kenyans' lives. They're dealing with horror. They have all these like the dead. From generations prior, too. And it's implied that the devil is making both sides angry. When it's obviously the colonists who are massacring the natives there. And
yeah, and they tried to show the natives as monstrous with the way that they treated that kid.
Oh, yeah, no. And I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, yeah, no, maybe they have a point there. Maybe you should do that to the kid. Because, I mean... They don't know, of course, that it's not the kid who's possessed.
Well, we don't know that.
What's bizarre about that, too. So, in the first Exorcist, they indicate that Father Marin went to Africa and performed an exorcism on a boy in Africa. And in Exorcist 2, we see that exorcism played out.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning just says, I don't really care about that. We're going to make our own thing up. Which maybe it's a good thing on some level, because, you know. But... It turns out the boy isn't even possessed. It's like Father Marion's love interest. Because we need someone in an Exorcist movie to look like Reagan possessed. Like all of a sudden they get the scratch marks out of nowhere. It's like, how'd you get scratched? Like Reagan got scratched because of the natural progression of the exorcism. Here it goes from like, she's like this lovely looking person to like
suddenly
scarred up, ugly, you know, nightmare fuel with no transition from point A to point B.
And, I don't know if it was just a thing of movies at the time, but like, was it, I mean, I guess on paper romance could be really interesting, but I don't think it's handled well.
And he never really acknowledged the fact that like, as a priest, he's not a priest now. He's Mr. Marin, not Father Marin, but like, he never deals with, like, he was a priest before that. So, like, you'd think he'd have some, like, you know, remnant thoughts about that, you know, because it is taboo for a Catholic priest to marry. Like, that's not allowed in the Catholic Church. So at no point does any, like, oh, hey, you know, I was a priest, does it make you uncomfortable or anything like that, or he feels uncomfortable with it just because of his training and teachings. You know, there's never a sense of, like, tension there. There's no forbidden element to this forbidden romance. So even as a romantic story, like, it sucks.
It feels like, outside of being an exorcist movie, it feels like any number of, like, horror mix of adventure. Like, it feels like it's trying to mix genres a bit in the way that it's approaching the story.
Oh, yeah.
And mystery.
Well, Crystal, it opens up with, like, a Byzantine massacre. Like,
yeah.
The first film, how do people die in the first Exorcist? Like, what? It's the two priests and the movie director. And I think that's it, right? No one else dies in the film.
That's it. There's not a high body count for that movie.
No, three people. This one, it's a body count in, like, the multiple thousands.
Yeah.
For, like, the Pazuzu demon, whose whole goal is just making people feel despair. Like, Pazuzu never is indicated, like, it's never indicated that Pazuzu's goal is to make people die. It's to make people suffer. So, why is there so much death in this film? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, nothing.
Wanted to top a body count, I suppose. I mean, it was coming out around the, I mean,
but, like,
it came out around that time when, like, what the remakes were happening a lot, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm trying
to think
of the time frame. It was
2004. You had Saw. You had, I think Hostel hadn't come out yet. I think the only like big remake was Texas Chainsaw Massacre at that point.
Yeah,
and the J horror films.
Right.
So there's nothing really. I think Renny Harlin just wanted over the top film because, like, it just does not feel like an Exorcist film. And I think because of that, it feels, and, like, there are horror films with massive body counts, like Pulse, for example, has a huge body count, like Kyra, whatever it is. But it's, like, I don't know. It just feels weird. Like, if this is the actual prequel to The Exorcist, this indicates that Pazuzu could have caused the deaths of a million people and just chose not to, which makes no sense for what Pazuzu wants, you know? It just feels like a possession is a downgrade for him, if anything, you know? Like, he's taking it easy possessing people.
It's strange. They didn't really think of the logic very well.
Yeah, like, there's a scene in the original Exorcist where, you know, the drawer opens up and, you know, Father Karras is talking to Reagan and, you know, Father Karras is like, oh, you know, open the drawer again. And Reagan's like, you know, it's a gross misuse of my power, you know. So, you know, the demon is powerful. You know, they have extreme ability. They just choose not to do it because they just don't want to, you know. It's not something that interests them. They'd rather just make people suffer. But, like, with this, they just want to blow everything up. They want to, like, have a big action film. And it just bothers me because it's, like, it's not the type of movie that does that. This is not a bombastic series. It's a very close-to-the-chest, very personal, very slow-paced, morally complex series. And by making it so big, so huge, it actually undermines the horror of The Exorcist. Which
that's
is
not scary.
Yeah, like, even Exorcist 2 understands The Exorcist more than this film does. Controversial opinion.
I think so.
Like, at least they understood that it was about people. It was about individuals being targeted by these oppressive forces.
That's,
you know,
true.
Yeah, like, and also, Pazuzu keeps talking about Marin, you know, fearing Marin and, like, you know, getting angry at Marin. It's like a theory that I kind of buy into, that the first film is really Pazuzu trying to get back at Marin in some way, you know? drawing him into the fold so he would
die. That's a good theory.
Yeah, yeah, it's a compelling theory, because even during Reagan's, like, thrashing, she keeps saying Marin, you know. She keeps talking about Marin. So there's a sense that whatever Marin did to Pazuzu, it's, you know, or to demons in general, he's a feared figure, and they want to get back at him.
Yeah.
Why would, but, like, here, Marin kind of loses. He saves one person, and thousands of others die.
Yeah, he's not a hero.
Yeah, he fails completely.
But then that somehow makes him want to go back to his faith?
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't make any sense. Also, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about. What was up with the green screens?
What do you mean? The green screen looked amazing.
These are the worst green screens I've seen in a while. Like, this movie cost $50 million in 2004.
Whoa.
This was not a cheap movie. Like, this was, like, after inflation. It's more than, I think, Exorcist the Believer. By comparison, let me double check this. Exorcist the Believer. That cost, so Exorcist Believer, the budget for that is $30 million in today's money.
Okay.
So that was like 20 years later. So not counting for inflation. That's 20, it's almost like almost half the budget of the beginning. And it looks better than this movie does.
Speaking of another movie, Five Nights at Freddy's is only $20 million.
Oh yeah, no, totally. And that movie is way better looking than this film could be. It blows my mind how this film got made, with the budget it did. In 2004, I can't wrap my mind around how anyone signed off on a movie where they seriously said, yeah, we're going to have a scene where a guy shoots himself after a butterfly comes out of his mouth.
Right.
Like, nothing. Oh, and then there's the weird subplot with the guy with the boils on his face.
Yeah.
Like, what does that add to the movie? Like, what did any of that add to anything in the film?
Another body they could pile up.
But they don't even show you the body.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's even the point? He's just there making everyone uncomfortable. And then, like, Filch from Harry Potter shows up, like, as a priest for one scene.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, nothing makes sense. Like, none of these creative decisions add anything to the film.
They just feel like they're just, like, hitting, like, a checklist
of,
things what they think should be in a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. And I guarantee
you. Blood and gore? Check. Yeah. Possession? Check. Priests? Check. Africa? Check.
And again, this is kind of spoiling the next episode, because we'll talk about Dominion next, but, like, Dominion prequel to The Exorcist, it's a very subdued, quiet film. Like, I don't think it's a great film, but it feels like an Exorcist film. Like, it feels at least like it's in that conversation.
So it's better.
I would say it's better. I wouldn't say it's good, but it's better.
Okay.
I don't know what they were going for this. Like, it's never boring, but it's nothing about it sticks in my memory. The beginning.
I think that's a very good point for this film. It is just a bland mix of nothing. If you want to see it like we did with watching all the other films, go ahead. It is pretty easily available on streaming services, which is good. I kind of wish more films were as easily streamable, especially older films. But if you want to see it, you can. It's just, you're not gonna love it.
No, there's just nothing to this film. Like, it just feels weird. Like, a film with this much happening should stand out.
But I mean, it's been a little bit since I saw it. Spoiler for when we recorded this episode a little later. But I'm trying to, like, rack my head to remember everything that happened in it. And it's a movie that leaves your head once you're done seeing it.
Yeah, there's a whole subplot about tombstones and, like, you know, that, like, you watch this and you go, like, who buried the bodies? I'm like, why? I don't care. Why are we talking about this? And, like, you look at, like, the history behind the film is more interesting than the film itself. For example, did you know that Tom McLaughlin, who directed Friday the 13th Part 6, was the first director to sign on to this film?
One of the best directors in the Friday the 13th franchise.
Oh, yeah. Huh. And he left because the script stunk.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
And you know who was cast before, who was going to be cast before Stellan Skarsgård as Father Merrin?
Oh, I'm curious.
Liam Neeson.
I see the reasoning.
Oh yeah, it's a great idea. I think it would be really cool, but obviously that was gone before they even began filming the first version of the film.
Yeah, he said no.
Yeah, and keep in mind this whole movie was reshot, like. It was, like, totally reshot. There's a couple of things that survived from cut to cut, but totally reworked.
You mean and, for Dominion or just for this one specifically? Well,
so, for this one. So, Dominion was filmed, and the producers did not like it. They thought it was too slow, it was too introspective, didn't care for it. They wanted to make the film bigger, and then cast Renny Harlin to do that. So Renny Harlin rewrote everything, hired new actors, fired old actors, and redid the whole film. I should also mention, and this is important, Renny Harlin, while making the movie, was hit by a car and his leg was shattered. And so he had to shoot like a bunch of the movie while on crutches. With a cast.
Gosh. What timing?
The two films together, collectively, have a budget of $90 million. These two films.
And they both flopped?
They both flopped. The second, Dominion, prequel to Exodus, that, oh God. Okay. Dominion prequel The Exorcist. Do you want to know how much it grossed?
Much.
$251,000.
So that was a success?
Against its $30 million budget.
You know, we win some, you lose some.
Yeah, and by the way, none of this counts the $10 million they spent between films trying to salvage everything. Which just didn't add up to anything on the screen. So a total of $90 million, and the total amount was $78,251,000.
Yikes.
This is a colossal failure in horror. Just they scrapped everything, reshot it, and it still failed. And they released the old version, and that failed even harder.
I'm starting to think tapping the well for Exorcist content is not always the best choice.
Right? And, like, who was really asking for a prequel to The Exorcist? Like, really think about it. We had the story told already in Exodus 2. We already have the prequel. There it is.
There we go.
And as bad as Exodus 2 is, and it is horribly bad. It's at least memorable.
It's memorable in how awful it is.
Yeah, like, I don't think this film is as bad as Exorcist 2 on a quality standpoint.
Yeah.
There's just nothing to it, which might be worse, honestly. Like, what's worse, an offensively bad film? Like, a bafflingly bad film? Or a film that's just so bland, you're like, I don't even care.
That's true.
Like,
at least Exorcist 2 is interesting to talk about. This one,
oh yeah, much. Had a ton of fun talking about Exorcist 2. This film, I was dreading discussing because it's like there's nothing to it. And it's amazing.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's amazing that this film has some of the scenes it does. There's a scene where a kid gets ripped apart by hyenas.
Yeah.
And it's so boring that even the characters in this scene barely react. Like, think about it. Who mentions the kid ripped apart by hyenas a minute after it happens?
Not even the dad.
No, no one cares. Because characterization, plot, meaning, none of them, they didn't care about any of that. There's a scene where a captain or something walks up to a person and just starts firing at them. And the reaction of the protagonist is, oh, that's bad. We have to leave now and go to the next scene. And they never mention it again. Like, yeah, it has ramifications, but, like, no one ever analyzes, yeah, they just shot someone on, like, right here. And, like, no one
They're still
one
trying
here.
Both sides of it, by the way.
Oh, they're both trying both sides of it. Yeah, no, I mean, those Kenyans, they were really at fault for the guy shooting them. They were really just as bad as the colonists opening fire on them. Like, I don't understand how anyone could feel sympathy for, like, the British or... What was it? The British or the French in this film?
They're French. British.
Yeah, British. I don't know how anyone could watch the British and be like, yeah, no, I feel bad for the British. They're really the real victims of the story. Especially with the weird Boyle guy and the general who kills himself because butterflies.
Butterflies are pretty scary, though, so...
Butterflies are pretty scary. Mothra is a pretty big threat. I know. I just don't get this movie. Like, I don't get the... I mean, I get it. It makes sense. I just don't get the mentality behind making it the way they did. Like, it's funny. Not even fun. Because Rennie Harlan can make fun movies. Like, it's not even, like, particularly fun. Like, Deep Blue Sea is a lot of fun. I just don't feel anything about this movie.
It's a paycheck.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
There's just not much to it. It's a very vapid film.
And I mean, that's what happens when you try and make an entire film when you're not happy with the other film.
Exactly.
It's like writing an essay, realizing you don't like the essay, but then having to write it in like a day.
Exactly. And like, Dominion has a lot of flaws. It's not a good movie, but you can tell at least it came from a place of earnestness. Whereas this film feels like it just kind of came out of like a desire to make a flashy big horror film. And that's why I think that you have to really want to make an Exorcist film, even if you're a talented director. It takes a very specific sort of person to do this kind of movie.
I mean, outside of the original films, it seems like so far the only ones that have really succeeded. I've not seen the new ones, so I can't, like, comment on quality-wise. Mm-hmm. But the only ones that have really succeeded have been William Peter Blatty doing Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
And then the folks who did the television show.
Yeah. And that's it. The television show is superb, but a very different beast.
Yeah, it's hard to compare it, but it does get the Exorcist right.
Yeah.
Adding a new elements and some horrific visuals, but also like some interesting introspective storytelling.
I think the problem is that with this film is that the movie has to be a bombastic experience. They had to make it big. And they just
failed.
They just don't. Like, it is big, but it's like The Exorcist is a very personal story. It's not. And Rennie Harlan, some of his, I think he's done some good horror sequels. Again, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is pretty good. It's flawed, but it's a pretty solid film. It's very stylish. It's very over the top. It's very, you know, memorable. But like, Pazuzu is not Freddy Krueger. Like, it's just not the same. And, like, you can tell that nowhere more than, like, the scene where Father Marin has to exorcise Sarah, the lady who's possessed. because they make it into like an action scene. They have to have her running down the tunnel, you know, running up that hill. They have to have her jumping around a big cave cavity and punching people and dragging people into tunnels. They can't just have like two people in a room doing like an exorcism. They have to make it into an action scene. And that's it's indicative of the whole film. They can't think of anything more interesting than a fight scene.
I mean, considering the director's past work, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like so the question is, why hire Rennie Harlan? Like, I'm not blaming Rennie Harlan. He's just doing what he does in every production. Like, this is just what you get when you hire him. Right. Why would you ever hire this guy to do an Exorcist prequel? Like,
because I don't know what makes the Exorcist work.
Right? Like, I mean, if you said Rennie Harlan's going to do a Van Helsing sequel, I'd be like, on board. Like, yeah. That sounds great. Yeah. Let's do it. But, like, The Strangers, again, I think he'd be good for The Strangers. That makes sense to me. I don't understand why you'd ever cast him for an exorcism movie. It just does not make sense to me. This is the most baffling choice I've ever seen in any casting for any movie.
Well, you have to ask the movie studio what they thought about it. Probably because he was available and probably was fairly cheap.
Probably. I don't know. Also, one more thing about Rennie Harlan, too.
Yeah.
So Rennie Harlan was married to actress Gina Davis. From 1983-1988. They divorced because he cheated on her.
Okay.
Years later, Rennie Harlan would direct Exorcist the Beginning. Hmm. And several more years later, Gina Davis would be in the Exorcist TV show.
It's always funny when there's that connection like that.
Right? It's a strange connection, but I think it's kind of fun. It's more fun than the movie.
Yeah.
And again, this just proves that Gina Davis is the better part of that relationship consistently, and that, this movie baffles me. I just don't get it. Nothing about this I like. It's just a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess. But go watch a better movie.
Like Hell House LLC Origins, the Carmichael Manor or Estate, whatever.
You got my transition well.
Yeah, that movie was great.
For the next one. So yes, I like the Hell House films. I think 2 and 3 aren't nearly as good as the first one, but there's parts of them that I enjoy. And this film blew those sequels way out of the water.
Oh yeah, I think 2 is really good until you get to the finale, which I think just ruins the whole movie. I think 2 is really good until that ending, which it undermines everything. 3, I think, is just bad. I don't like 3 at all. But this film had me on edge, which never happens. Like, I never get like tense during a horror film. Like, it never. But this was like, it got to me a little bit. It didn't scare me.
I don't
want to
spoil because it just came out. But
no, it's unfair.
I actually thought it was pretty scary. I thought it was pretty scary.
There's a few scenes where I'm like, you know, it does that thing which the first film did so well, which it's like the Weeping Angel effect. And if you've seen the movie that I'm talking about, where it's like, you look, okay.
I mean, have you seen any of the trailers? There's something of clowns.
I mean, if you've seen the first film, it's the same idea, just executed differently. And it's so effective. And it opens the door up.
I feel like it's one of those like sequels that works well as like a quote unquote origins or prequel, because it just tells a lot of really interesting things about the story that aren't trying to divorce itself from like the magical sort of stuff that's happening too. You know what I mean? Like, it makes it human is what I'm saying.
There's a real human element to it. I do agree.
I think some of the scares are genuinely scary. Like, I thought I'm not gonna spoil this, but there's a certain scene where there's a certain video call. The execution of that was
creepy. That was really creepy.
It is clever. It was, like, well thought out, well done.
There is a, there are some bits in that film. Did you see the end credit scene?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just like, that was a little silly. I'm like, oh, you well, hear that, da, 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 and then, like, oh.
I think that was a, that was, it was kind of meant to be a little funny.
It was, I laughed. I laughed a bit. Because it was just like, oh, you hear this, like, oh, window. I'm trying to say because it's a spoiler, but, like, it's a fun movie. I recommend,
yeah, if you want, like, a good, creepy, like, haunted house, found footage style movie, it delivers.
One thing I will say, though, and this is a quasi-spoiler, so please try to avoid this if you... I'll try to avoid saying anything specific, but there are some segments of the movie that take place in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But the characters are dressed like they're from the 1950s. Like, what are they wearing in that? I know they're supposed to be rich people from the 80s, but, like, they dress like they're, like, I don't know. It did not feel like 80s clothing at all for, like, teenagers, like, or young adults.
I mean, I chalk that up to them just trying to get the fact that they're rich across.
Yeah, but, like,
but I get what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like a little weird. Like, I don't know. I didn't. That felt like they looked too. I don't know. It felt anachronistic, personally. But, and I love how you have like a lesbian couple. Like, well, maybe not lesbian. It could be bi. But like a same gender couple as like the main characters in a horror film, and like their relationship feels genuine. Like it feels like it's in that way where like you can tell there's some big problems below the surface. But they also deeply care about each other, and I love that kind of dynamic where it's like
it's a same gender relationship that doesn't feel that feels like it could have been written for like a straight couple as well
easily and yeah. Like what I love about it is there's a genuine sense of warmth, but also a genuine sense of like tension. I also don't know if I'd say the main character strikes me as autistic a little bit. I might just be reading into that too
Margo?
Much. Yeah. Like, she's, like, a little obsessive over the whole case to a point where it's, like, a little obsessive compulsive. But, like, in a way where it's
reasoning
subtle.
Why it makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense by the end, but I feel there's also a little bit of, like, that obsessive compulsive component to it, which I might be reading too much into it. I'm saying it flat out right now. I might be reading too much into it, but it felt like a little, I don't know. I could, like subtly. But again, that could just be me projecting or reading in the wrong way. Who knows?
No. I mean, maybe it's open for you to interpret in that way. Either way.
It could be unintentional also. I'm not saying they intentionally did that. It could be totally just, oh, I guess you can read it that way if you want, like one of those situations, but I really dug it. And there's some great scary scenes in it that I just loved.
So if you want like a good found footage horror film that's scary, it's worth your time. But I do recommend having seen the other films first.
Yeah. Even three.
Because it doesn't really hold your hand necessarily with all of that, you know?
Well, I watched it with my spouse and, you know, she watched it with me and like had very passing knowledge of the previous films and followed along just nicely. I think it's because we know what they're referencing, but if you don't know what happened with the Abaddon Hotel and he's like, oh, here's a place, it's a hotel, there's demonic stuff afoot there.
You don't know the history of the series.
Yeah, so you don't really know what you're missing. You kind of just go, oh, okay, that's fine.
I think it was a smart idea for them though to do a new mystery and a new story that weaves in, but it's a good entry point for that because it doesn't make you feel like it doesn't. I think it's been like 4 years since the last film, I don't remember everything. So it was nice to like watch and be like, it slowly reminds you of things that happened at the Abaddon Hotel without like info dumping it all at once. You know, it gives a new mystery and a new set of characters for you to get invested in and interested in. And then it layers that other stuff underneath the surface, and then, without spoiling anything, it ties everything far more closely as you get to the finale.
Yeah, and I will say this, too, with Hell House. I don't think Tully as a villain is particularly compelling in the series, but I find who ends up being the quote-unquote main antagonist of this film way more compelling and way more unsettling.
Because of the motivation. Tully is more of a...
He's like a mustache
you don't
thriller.
Know is... Yeah, he's just an evil villain for doing evil things, which isn't bad. And I think the actor who plays him was fun.
Yeah, he's having fun with it.
But the antagonist you're saying of this film is far more captivating.
There's a tragedy to it. There's a tragedy, but there's also like an earnest terror to what this character does. And I really thought it was compelling. I really dug it. Because, again, a good villain really can make or break a movie, you know? Which is also why Exorcist the Beginning is so underwhelming.
That's true.
like, what is Pazuzu here for? What are you doing? Oh, also, one thing that bugged me about the beginning that I just thought of just now. What are all those crows doing inside the church that was buried under the sand?
They're just hanging out.
No one sees that and goes, yeah, no, that's weird how those birds are there. I don't understand why they're crows in a church that was underground in Africa.
I don't know. Birds just do that. Don't you know birds?
They just materialize in underground in submerged churches just magically,
it's
huh?
Bird things. It's just bird things.
Just bird things, huh? Oh, my God, this movie.
See Hell House, LLC, Origins, The Carmichael Manor, in place of it. I recommend.
Yeah. Or watch, alternatively, Your Wall as paint dries. It will be more captivating and more of an
educational
experience.
It's a better 4 film in a franchise.
That's very true.
It's a better 4 film in a franchise.
Or watch Rennie Harlan's other fourth horror film, Nightmare on Elm Street 4. You get to see a person turn into a cockroach.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that death.
Yeah, it's a great death. It's one of the best deaths in the series. Same guy who gave us this train wreck.
And, I would love to continue shitting on that movie and also singing the praises of Hell House LLC. But unfortunately, I do think this episode has to be a little bit shorter than usual because I have things and stuff I have to do.
I have other things too, like not watching Exorcist the beginning.
Yeah. So, with that being said, do you want to plug where the people can find you?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, Blue Sky, various writing places that I've written. I've mentioned my Biolens last episode. Just watch that. I can't remember everything I've written before. It's one of those days.
Do all the things.
I do things.
You can follow me on Twitter at CrystalWRocks, and I've got a link tree in my bio over there, and you can read my articles on Medium under Crystal Williams. But with that being said, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom podcast. We will be back next time to discuss Dominion, a prequel to The Exorcist, in our continuing miniseries. And we're almost done. It's just 2 more episodes. And I'm sure you're all waiting to hear our thoughts on the newest film. So that's coming up at some point. I have to make plans to go see that in a theater.
Yeah, right. That's a fun one.
Good thing I work in one, so I can probably find that out.
That actually helps a lot, actually, I'm not gonna lie.
It does, yeah. And then I don't have to spend money to see it.
That's the benefit of working in the theater.
Yes, so... So I don't have to give money if it's bad. So... with that being said, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Anthony, for being on again as our temporary co-host. Honorary gal.
I'll accept that. That works.
Yes, honorary gal. And with that, we'll see you in the next episode. Goodbye, everybody.